Spirit Radio Podcasts.
It's something that we will all have to face at one time or another in our lives, and I don't think it's something that ever gets any easier, but there is things perhaps that we can do to cope with loss and to cope with grief. Well, our next guest has launched a really fantastic new book, and it's really trying to do that, is trying to provide comfort, trying to provide solace and maybe practical insights into how we can deal with loss, how we can deal with bereavement. And one of the great things as well about this book is all the proceeds from it are going to Our Lady's Hospice. It's great to have with me in studio author and communications specialist Orla Carmody. Morning, Orla. How are you?
Good morning, Wendy. Lovely to be here.
So when you were with us in studio a number of years ago, you were talking about your last book, which is very, very different. It was all about being a good leader and all that sort of stuff. This is a very different book. What was the thing that made you want to write this?
Well, I suppose it's down to my own background because, yes, obviously I'm a leadership coach and a communication specialist and a journalist, and I have been for many years. But when I was 28, I was widowed. And, you know, it's very unusual to be widowed quite so young. And it's a real conversation stopper, believe me, when you tell somebody you're a widow at that age. They just don't know what to do with it. You know, my life went on. It became very, very happy. I've had a very successful career. I'm remarried, Gavin Duffy, and we've four fabulous kids. And, you know, I have a wonderful life. But grief is that kind of coat that you wear that's on all the time that nobody sees, but it's there.
Mm. And you probably couldn't have imagined that when you were in that grief at 28.
No,
the life
no.
that you have now.
No, I couldn't have. I wouldn't have seen the light at the end of the tunnel at all. But now, looking back in hindsight with my experience, I can see that it's something you carry with you for a long, long time. It never really goes away. You learn to deal with it. Your life becomes very happy. You can do lots of wonderful things, but you're always carrying this thing in your heart. And I suppose I've always wanted to explore that sort of parallel world we live in when we're carrying grief, but we're getting on with things. And you want to get on with things for the person who's gone because you know that's what they would want for you. So you do, but you still never leave it behind. And I really wanted to explore that. I wanted to do something for the hospice because Kieran, my first husband, passed away in the hospice and they were really, really good to us at the time. And I've always remembered that. But because my life went on and I had four kids very quickly, I had a roller coaster of an existence. I never really paused and stopped and went back to them and said, right, you were very good to me at some point in my life. I want to do something back for you. So this book, Without You, Living With Loss, is exactly that. It's a way of giving back to the hospice, but it's also a way of helping people who may be right as we're speaking, contemplating the thought of losing somebody. Maybe they're looking at somebody across a hospital bed and thinking, how are they going to manage when it comes to pass? Or maybe it's somebody who's been recently bereaved and is really struggling. And I really feel this book will help them because it's actually a compilation of letters from all kinds of people in the public eye, the media, the arts, politics, sport, who have written a letter directly to the person who is gone. So it's not like writing about somebody when you kind of start editing your words. You're writing directly to the person you loved. So the letters just flow. And they're all so touching and personal and brave.
That's
you're
the
so
thing.
Brave.
When you just start to read some of these letters, Orla, you obviously first you think about your own experiences and you kind of identify with a lot of them. But it must have been difficult for so many people who wrote these letters. Difficult, probably cathartic as well. How did you approach people and say, you know, be part of this?
Well, some people I phoned up out of the blue and they wouldn't have known me. And I'm this voice at the end of this phone or I'm an email saying, will you write a letter to somebody really close to you, your mom or your sister or your friend who's gone? And, you know, the reactions were very different. Some people got that straight away and said, absolutely, of course, I'll do that for the hospice. If it helps one person reading my letter, I'll do it. And there were others who were so funny about it who just couldn't cope with it. And that's fine. Everybody is different. There was one sports person in particular, a man who's very, very well known. And he had the decency to ring me back. He didn't just ignore the letter. But he rang me and he said, Orla, I couldn't do that. I couldn't possibly do it. It's just not me. It'd be so weird writing to my dead mum or my dead brother or my dad. You know, he was so funny, but he was so lovely about it. And I said, OK, it's no problem. I'm glad you phoned me back. Some people just didn't respond at all. And that's OK, too.
Did you start with your own letter to your first husband?
I did. That was the first place I started. I was on a plane going to New York. I was actually about to speak at a conference. And I just had that space and time that you get sitting on an airplane. Sometimes you're in that bubble. And I had been thinking about this for a long time, and the title of the book, Without You Living With Loss, just came to me. I said, right, that's it, I have a title. And it's going to be letters. And I sat down and I started writing my own letter. And I wrote it and it was terrific. But of course, I started bawling as I was writing it. So I had all of these very concerned air hostesses coming up and offering me champagne and asking me, was I all right? And I said, I'm fine, honestly, I'm fine. But yes, thanks, I love the champagne. And it was lovely. But I got the letter done. So I had the letter, I had the title, and then I began asking people. And I started with people I knew, as I said, in the public eye, who I knew had experienced loss. And I had got great mixed reactions, but some of them were so fabulous. I suppose some of the people I had the most difficulty asking maybe were the people who were writing about lost children, because we, you know, it's so poignant. And there's a lovely couple, Tom and Tatiana Fay. They're kind of LinkedIn campaigners. They lost their daughter after a couple of days after birth. And they just put up this post on LinkedIn and began campaigning for awareness around this. And I said, I need to talk to those people. And like that, out of the blue, and they just said yes. And they came to the launch and I met them for the first time. And they're now expecting their second child, which is absolutely beautiful for them. But they were hard people to ask, but they did it. Another couple who are famous for campaigning for children, and it is Tony and Mary Heffernan of the Bumblins Foundation. Mm. And they obviously lost their two children, Saoirse and Liam, at about the age of 5 each. And they have put their whole life into raising funds for the Bumblins Foundation. They're just amazing. And actually, Tony posted a thing this morning on LinkedIn. And if I can read it out for you, if I will, because it's absolutely gorgeous. He said, another busy day for the Bumblins Foundation. Vehicle 1 is turning blue lights on in Dublin. Vehicle 2 is heading home to Roscommon with King B Tommy on board. Vehicle 3 is going to Limerick. Vehicle 4 is taking somebody, and Vehicle 5 is heading to Limerick with Queen Bee Taylor Rose. And to think in a few more weeks there will be 8 more Bumblances. Isn't that just beautiful?
It's fantastic.
But they were
news.
So lovely to do that and to agree and to write to their beautiful children and to come to the launch. And it was lovely for me to meet them again. I was meeting them for the first time. So there were a lot of people like that who I just reached out to and who got it and said yes.
Here's the thing that's striking, Orla, is, and you kind of touched on it yourself when you were just sharing your own experience of when you were widowed very young, as we have, I don't know, is it an Irish thing or maybe it's just a grief thing where we try to get on with it, and when people ask us if we're okay, we say yeah grand, when actually maybe we're not. Was one of the hopes with this to get people comfortable with just talking about grief?
I think so. I think it's a conversation we need to have more often. And I think when we realise that somebody we know is going through grief, I think we have to take the lead on it and bring it up, and bring up the name of the person who's gone. Because when you're grieving, you love hearing the person's name spoken because it keeps them alive in your heart and in your conversation. So, for example, if you have a friend whose mother passed away and, you know, you meet her on the street here in Bray and you say, how are things? I'm sorry for your trouble. And then you kind of move on. Whereas you don't say her mother's name is Betty. You don't say, do you miss Betty? Do you miss your mum? How are you getting on? Can we go for a coffee? Come and tell me all about it. Let her talk and ask those questions that allow your friend to talk, because talking is so healthy and so good. And I think maybe we do the funerals in Ireland really, really well. Up around the northeast where I live, Drogheda, they're brilliant at funerals. That's the one thing I realised when I moved there. People go to funerals in droves. They're so kind and so good.
And you feel that support at the time and all these people.
And you feel all that support at the time. But I often wonder, maybe 3 weeks or 3 months down the line, are we still as good? And that is the very time I think the person needs the support most. And I think they need the conversation most. And they need the name of their loved one brought into conversation. And I think if we could work on doing that, we'd be going a long way.
It's following through with what you say often at funerals, and I'm as guilty of it as anyone, where you shake the hands and you say, you know, if there's anything I can do, and then life goes on and you don't follow up and you don't put the call in, and or you don't turn up on the doorstep for a cup of tea or with a hot dinner or something like that, you know. And I think it's a really, really important point. In terms of, Orla, just, and again, what struck me just when you were talking about writing the first letter and crying on the airplane, you know, and it was many years since you had lost your first husband. Is grief something in your experience, and just from reading all these letters, that we deal with better, but it never leaves us, really?
No, it never leaves you, and it can jump up and bite you in the leg at the least sort of expected moment. So you can be, you know, I've spoken to people a lot about this because of having done this book, and it's been in my own conversation a lot, and people will tell you it's 10 years since they lost their mom or lost their dad, and they hear a snatch of music. Or for me, it was after Kieran passed, a few years later, I remember walking down Grafton Street and I got a whiff of his aftershave from somebody, and I nearly fell over. It, you know, it has that powerful, powerful impact on you. And people can be 10, 15, 20 years down the line and the grief, you know, really, really strikes you. I find in my own life, even, you know, because I lost my dad then as well, it's 18, 19 years now. But like that, sometimes I wake up in the morning and I might have had a dream about my dad and he's just there. You know, that's, I think, the thing about grief, it is always simmering under the surface. But I think we have to express it more and talk about it more and allow those people who are a huge part of our lives, allow them stay a part of our lives by keeping them in conversation and keeping them in our world. And the writers, all of the writers who wrote for me, and as I said, from politics and from music and from novelists and just wonderful people who've all contributed, every one of them was just so generous and so brave to be so open, to put their feelings, to put their heart on their sleeve and write those letters that are really personal.
Did you learn a lot from reading those other experiences?
You learn a lot about the experiences of grief and how different they are, and you learn about a lot about the people. And you're reading about somebody's mum who died many years ago and you're going, oh my God, I wish I'd known her. One of them was Dancing with the Stars producer Larry Bass, and Larry is an amazing television producer and he's been responsible for so many of the big television programmes. And his mum died when he was very young. He was only 14 or 15. He was only a kid. And she loved ballroom dancing. And it took him years to get this programme, Dancing with the Stars, on with RTÉ. He wanted to do it for about 12 years and he finally persuaded them to do it. And what a success it has been. But if you see the picture in the book of his beautiful mum, Pat, and to think she loved ballroom dancing, and one of his earliest memories of her is going out ballroom dancing. So there's such a lovely circle of life thing that's going on in the book. So while it's a sad book and it's about loss and bereavement, collectively it's very uplifting. It's very life affirming when you read all these different letters, and it's really I think it will be so helpful to people, and I'd love people to go out and buy it and support the hospice.
So where can people get their hands on a copy of the book then?
Well, you can get it from Dubray Books or Easons. We had the launch in Dubray and Grafton Street and they were absolutely wonderful to them, to us. They looked after us so well. But also directly from the hospice website, which is OLH, Our Lady's Hospice, OLH.ie. And of course Our Lady's Hospice look after the Wicklow Hospice as well, and they'll be breaking ground here with the new hospice in the next few months, so that's a big connection here for Wicklow as well.
Fantastic stuff. What a really great cause that this book is going to. If you've just joined me, I've been talking to Orla Carmody about her latest book release, which is Without You, Living with Loss. And as Orla mentioned, you get an Easons, Dubray, or on the Our Lady's Hospice website as well. Orla, a pleasure to have you with us on Spirit Radio.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.